Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Conscious Convos. This is episode number 5, and today on the show we have Andrea Anstis. Andrea is a transpersonal psychotherapist, and we talk about what that means in the episode, but we talk more on the episode about a specific topic, which is holotropic breathing. Whether you've heard of holotropic breathing or not, you're going to enjoy this episode for sure. I personally had not heard of holotropic breathing, but I was definitely very interested to attend a holotropic breathing session by the end of the episode, and I'm sure that many of you will feel the same way. It's just truly fascinating, and you're really in for a treat in this episode. So hope you enjoy as much as we did. And without further delay, Andrea Anstis. Computer. Okay, we're recording now. So, hello again, Andrea, and it's very nice to finally meet you. I'm going to give a small introduction about you, Andrea, but I'm sure you're going to be better at introducing yourself than I am. But Andrea is a transpersonal psychotherapist with almost, you know, 3 decades of therapeutic and healing work. I know that you're an expert in so many different healing modalities, one of which is breath work, which is what we're very interested in and what we want to talk about today. But there's also movement therapy, body work, Reiki, and so many others. And like us, you're also based here in Dubai. So, Andrea, you were introduced to me by Aparajita, who was a guest also on the podcast. So it's lovely to have you here. The first question, Andrea, I really want to start way back. So how did you become interested in this world in general, in the world of healing and therapy? How did you get into it?
I mean, it's a really big question, but I think Muhammad, there was just a calling, you know. I think there was a thread, and I just kept following that thread. And I think that kind of spiritual calling happened when I was really young. Like, I felt that connection from a really young age. And then when I was a teenager, my mum took me to yoga. And I became quite fascinated with yoga, with the breath, and with these Indian gurus as well. And right. So then when I was in my 20s, I went to a weekend workshop where part of the practices for that workshop, like I was probably around age 19, 20, was meditation, doing circles where you shared your feelings, and then there was this breath work experience as well. And I mean, this was just incredible for me.
Which country was that?
This was in New Zealand. That was happening in New Zealand.
And okay.
It was wild. And I remember leaving that weekend, like riding home on my bike and just feeling like there was so much space and freedom. Having spent the weekend with these hippies, basically, and also, you know, I don't think I'd ever really shared my feelings, you know, in that kind of sacred space with anyone ever before. So that experience of having people hold space was mind-blowing.
Wow. And that was before the internet. That was way before the internet.
It was way yeah. back, because I've just turned 60, so it was like 40 years back.
40 years back, was this something that was popular in those days, or was it you just got lucky and you to
I
find?
I think I got lucky, but I think that, you know, there's a part of me that kind of saw that opportunity, and I was drawn to that energy. You know, I saw an ad for this weekend workshop in a health food shop. And I was like, I need to be on this. And then because I, you know, that interest continued, and I think, you know, some part of me was desperately seeking this kind of opening up. And I think I heard you say, Lena, about your childhood, about kind of getting out of the boxes.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I needed to kind of break through a lot of repression from my upbringing, but I wasn't thinking about it like that because I didn't have that language. It was just like, you know, I need something more. There has to be something more. And then I moved to Australia when I was in my, I was about 22, 23. I moved to Australia with my boyfriend. And then I did some more breath work. And then I got involved in workshops that explored all the chakras. They were kind of personal development workshops. And then after that, after 2 years of Australia, we moved to the UK. And then I trained to be a rebirther, which is, you know, it's breath work. It was kind of more of an original form of breath work, and they called it rebirthing. It was just an hour-long session rather than, you know, holotropic breath work is 2.5 to 3 hours long. So it was kind of a mini version of the breath work that I mostly do today.
Right. So what is a transpersonal psychotherapist exactly?
Yeah, you know, in my psychotherapy practice, we honor the transpersonal as kind of beyond and connecting the personal. So we honor the spiritual. We honor this kind of bigger aspect of ourselves, but we also honor the body in all of that as well. So the somatic is really important. So we honor the heart, we honor the body, we honor the spirit. So it's a really holistic form of psychology, and it's quite a recent form of psychology. But my training, you know, I trained to be a Hoffman process teacher. So the Hoffman process is very much about looking at childhood patterns. So looking at the patterns that we were conditioned into as children that we continue to play out, act out in our lives unconsciously, and it creates all kinds of havoc in our relationships and in our jobs. And so I also have a real perspective around, you know, that childhood, the inner child piece.
Well, this is incredible. Yeah. Maybe we'll have like a podcast just to talk about this. This sounds extremely interesting.
Yeah, I agree. There's so many things, Andrea, that you mentioned, and it's like each one deserves its own episode. I totally agree. So now, like, to zoom in a little bit on the topic of breath work, what is it exactly, in your opinion, about breathing that made it so connected to the world of spirituality? Because you see that in so many different types of therapy, but also different cultures, different religions, different, you know, sacred practices that all involved breathing and somehow connecting it to the higher self.
Yeah, I mean,
what is that in your opinion?
The breath just seems to be that direct bridge to our consciousness. And I think Tia Aparajita was talking about that, you know, with yoga and the pranayama practices. So with holotropic breath work, it's not just the breath, it's also the music and that safe and sacred space that it happens in. So a combination of those three things, that deeper, fuller, faster breath that opens us up, and it mobilizes, you know, there's often material, unconscious material, or material that we're kind of semi-aware of that needs expression, that's often trapped in our bodies and our muscles, and it needs to come forward, it needs to be expressed. And so the breath really helps that to happen, as does the sacred space, so that holding space. So I think our participants, or if I'm working one-on-one, my client, you know, there has to be that sense of safety for people to feel like they can let go. And people need to feel like, oh yes, you know, the facilitator can handle whatever comes up. And so there has to be the ethics and the safety. And then we have incredible music. So the music alone, if you just lay there for 2.5, 3 hours and listened to the soundscape that we use for holotropic breathwork, you'd have an incredible experience. Lots of amazing world music that's put together in a very particular way to take you through this wave.
Fascinating. Before we move more into details about the holotropic breathwork, Andrea, I want to touch on the article that you wrote about the trauma. It was very, very beautifully written, actually. And I want to talk a little bit about that. If you can tell us about the bookmarks and the disproportionate reactions to similar events. The way it was written was just really wonderful.
Yeah, actually, to give credit where credit's due, my friend Vanessa wrote that article. So she's a writer, and Vanessa helps me with the holotropic workshops, and she's been involved with holotropic for, you know, the last sort of 12, 15 years. She's been assisting me with the workshops. But what we're referring to there is the coexes, or Stan Grof calls it like the system of condensed experience. So it's like these kinds of constellations of experiences that have a theme that kind of run through, and they keep repeating in our life. They keep going on and on and on. And the one that she often uses is, can you imagine, you know, a man when he is, 40 years old, and he goes to the barber to get a haircut, and he has this huge reaction because the barber does the cape up, you know, how they put that cape thing on around you, and he does it up too tightly. And this man is like freaking out. So he has this huge reaction. And as he tracks it back, he realizes, oh, wow, you know, when I was a teenager, I had this near drowning experience. And then he tracks it, you know, where he couldn't breathe and where he was really gasping for breath and a lot around the kind of throat. And then when he was a child, you know, he had a sense of, he got, say, for example, the whooping cough, and again, had a lot of stress at his throat. And as he tracks it back, he goes back, and in something like holotropic breath work, he remembers that actually he was born with the cord around his neck, the umbilical cord around his neck. And that created a lot of stress and difficulty with breathing at the time of his birth. And as he goes back to that, and then there could also be a transpersonal aspect of that, where in breath work or hypnosis, he connects maybe even with a past life experience of being hung, for example, or some other trauma happening to his neck.
Around the throat, yeah.
So these themes that keep on repeating until we go back to the original trauma. And so that's what, you know, if we're doing a few holotropics, we can often see that there's these themes running through, and they happen on all these different levels, on the kind of perinatal level with the umbilical cord, and then on what we call the biographical level with the story and life of the near drowning or the choking or the whooping cough incident, and then the transpersonal with the past life recall. So there's these different themes, and they're kind of, you know, it's like the beads, the pearls of a necklace, you know, the beads of a necklace, and then we see actually there's this thread that runs through all of those experiences.
Go ahead, Lina. We like talking.
Probably you were here. I know, we always do that. And we're probably about to ask the same question, because I think we're very much interested in how does the healing actually happen, Andrea? Was that your question, Mo?
You know,
almost, you know, almost the same.
Yeah, well, the healing happens by us going deeply into the feeling and fully expressing it, fully releasing it, whether it's the grief, whether it's the shame, whether it's the you know, the profound sadness or the extreme anger, we want to go deeply into that feeling and giving it full expression. And once we do that, a whole nother space kinds, you know, definitely opens up. There's a whole nother level that opens up, and that it's like an energy cycle comes to completion. And then we move on to the next thing. So in the breath work, it kind of looks like you're cycling through stuff. So you breathe and you breathe and you breathe. And we tell you to breathe until you're surprised. So that is until some feeling comes up, until you start having some vision, until you have some experience. And then you go fully into that. You intensify it. Or if there's feelings coming up, you give them full expression. And then it abates. It moves through. It's like you have a sense of completion. But on the other side of that completion, you're really a different person. You know, you've transformed by kind of facing and going through.
Mm. I mean, just saying that gives me almost an anxiety, Andrea, so much to deal with. But it takes a lot of bravery to actually choose to go into such an experience, right? Like, you must be very brave. You must be really ready to face all of these traumas in your life, because some of them you're not even aware of.
Well, I think, you know, the thing is, we're never given more than we can handle. So we don't decide. Our deeper self, our psyche basically decides what needs to come up, what needs to be expressed, what we need to be shown. So at the end of the holotropic breathwork, when we all sit around, we really reflect on what unfolded, and we ask that question, why this and why now? Because basically, inner healer is in charge. So this inner healing wisdom scans our psyche, decides what needs to be addressed, what needs to be seen or re-experienced or released. And but honestly, we're never given more than we can deal with, and the facilitators are never given more than they can deal with as well. So you intuitively know, you know, I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to dive in. I mean, people don't show up to this. They don't make that sort of time commitment or that financial commitment unless they're ready to do the work. And they might have tried lots of other things, you know, and they're ready to dive in. They're ready to dive into their anxiety, for example, and see what's underneath it.
Right.
There's a calling there for sure.
So what's the process exactly, Andrea? Walk us through the whole holotropic breathing. First of all, what does holotropic mean? And then what is the process from the moment I enter until it ends? What is
going on? Okay. So so what it means, so it's from two Greek words. So holos means whole, and tropine means progressing towards or moving towards. So it means moving towards wholeness. And there's a deeper part of ourselves that is always attempting to move us towards wholeness. Yeah, so we really trust this deeper inner healer that's moving us in that direction. And the wonderful thing about holotropic breathwork is that it really relies on this inner healer, this inner wisdom. So we as facilitators, we're setting you up with preparation, we're holding the space for the session, we're helping you with integration, but it is really your inner healer, your inner healing wisdom that's brought you to this experience. And we fully and totally trust that. So you're going to be prepared even before you show up at the session, Muhammad. We do a Zoom session a few nights before, and we go through all those different experiences that you might have in the session. And, you know, you may not have these, you know, every single one of these experiences, but we kind of prepare you for what it'll look like. And you get to meet some of the other people who are going to be on the workshop. And then on the morning of the workshop, we do an introductory circle where we just go over the role of the breather, how to breathe, the role of the sitter. So because you're paired up. And so we explain to the sitter how they're gonna hold space for the breather. And we do some sharing of feelings and, you know, go over a few other things like confidentiality. And it might feel like it's gonna get tough at some point. Don't run away, stay till the end. So we set up those ground rules, yeah. And then they divide up into pairs, and we have mattresses all around the room. And so those pairs decide who is gonna breathe in the morning, because I'm usually doing 1 day workshop in Dubai. In New Zealand, we do a weekend workshop, but in Dubai, things are speedy. So we do it just over 1 day. So they decide who's gonna be the breather, who's gonna be the sitter. So that person lies down, and we lead them through a relaxation just to kind of get them fully into the space and grounded before they start. And then the music starts. And the music is designed to really support the process. So the first hour is really powerful, strong, rhythmic, drumming, shamanic style music. Yeah, it's like pounding, lots of bass, and sometimes, you know, it's sort of really tribal oftentimes. You know, sometimes it can be a bit trancey, a bit clubby. Sometimes people actually want to get
somebody produces dance. This. Someone produces yes. this music specifically yes. for the event for you. So it's not yes, like something you found. It's been yeah, done specifically for the event.
It's been done specifically for holotropic breath work right. by people who have done that qualification, that certification, because it takes hours upon hours to produce this music. So everything has to be cut and kind of, you know, like pieces of music kind of put together, and it takes forever. Wow. And then there's some music that there's some 3 hour playlists that are epic, and then some that are okay. But, you know, we want to choose the epic ones. So that's the first hour. And then it moves into the second hour of music, which is more emotional. So that first hour of music is really driving the breath. It's really getting people into the breath faster, deeper, fuller. The second hour of music is much more emotional. And then about 45 minutes into that second hour, so we're now an hour 45 into the breathwork experience, we come to this place which is called the heart breakthrough. So we come to this place where the music is incredibly heartful, but also with a spiritual flavor, where you just kind of break through into this whole other deep heart place. And often people can, you know, they can experience some incredible feelings at that point. Mm. And then we go more, the last hour is more chanting, more spiritual music. Some is kind of like, you know, hymns from hymn-like, church-like music. A lot of beautiful Indian chants. So it's more integration for that third hour. And stuff still happens in that third hour, but we're trying to, it's the sort of coming on home invitation, coming back to the body, coming back down, especially by the end of the third hour. So, you know, it's a big journey. It's a big journey with a very distinct wave.
Does the breath work change in those 3 hours? Like, for example, the reason why I'm asking this is because I've done Wim Hof and Richie Boost talk and the Art of Living, and they had like different kind of breathing techniques. Sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's shallow, sometimes you actually pause. So how is it like with the holotropic breath work? Is it just the same throughout the 3 hours or?
No, not at all. Yeah. Basically, we want you to breathe until you're surprised. So we talk about the breath is like the taxi that takes you to the mall. So the breath is what takes you into that expanded or non-ordinary space of consciousness. Once you're in that non-ordinary space of consciousness, you don't need to keep breathing in that deeper, fuller, faster way. Then you're having your experience. And then after maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you've come through that experience and you kind of feel your consciousness rising and you're back in this kind of more ordinary everyday consciousness and you're more aware of the room and whatever's going on. And then you start the breathing all over again, but your body really decides. So that first 15, 20 minutes of holotropic can feel like an effort. Like it's like we get the sitter to sometimes just remind the breather to keep breathing in that deeper, fuller, faster way, or to breathe in the air, because it can feel like, you know, a little bit like hard work. But after a while, the body just takes over. It's like a release valve and the body knows how to do it. And then you definitely don't keep breathing the whole time. You need, you know, you have those pauses. And sometimes the body goes, we don't want it generally to be shallow, but sometimes it just goes softer. Sometimes it goes through the nose instead of through the mouth. And we're not pedantic about those, you know, those ways of breathing, because we don't want, you know, different kind of pranayama, different sort of ways of breathing to get in the way of the experience. That's not, you know, that's the breath work is very simple. It's fuller, faster, and deeper until something happens.
Right.
And do participants usually come with the sitter, or do they just get matched during the session?
Yeah, you know, sometimes they come with their partner. So couples might come together, friends might come together, but individuals come as well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, not always, couples don't always necessarily want to breathe with each other. So then yeah, they'll say, okay, darling, you go over into that far corner. I'll do my stuff over here. So you know, some people have paired up before. Some people have maybe seen at the Zoom intro, they've decided on somebody that maybe they want to work with. So you can, you know, sort that out beforehand or just in the moment we decide at the end of the intro circle.
Yeah. And sorry, Mo, I have a few more questions in that department.
Go for it.
So what is exactly the role of a sitter? And when it's time for them to switch, so does the sitter go through exactly the same process? He's hearing exactly the same music all over again?
What's a sitter? Is a sitter? I don't even know what that is.
So actually, I didn't finish that full day description. I gave you some space to talk. But you're divided into a pair. So there's two of you doing this breathwork experience. So one of you is lying down, breathing, going into that expanded state. And so the breather is a full receiver of the focus of the sitter. So the other person, the sitter, is sitting right next to them, but not suffocating them. So that person sitting next to them is handing the tissues when necessary, is you know, holding that person's hand if they need that, handing them their bottle of water, guiding them to the bathroom because you can feel a bit wobbly sometimes. And they're being really, really, they're a symbol of the good parent, you know, that benevolent, loving, caring caretaker, basically. So they're creating a safe space along with the facilitators, because also sometimes, you know, when you're in it, you want to move around, you want to, we really want you to move however your body, the impulses of your body, just allow them full expression. So we've got to keep our breathers safe. So occasionally we're putting pillows here, there. Not occasionally, often we're putting pillows here. We're making sure that, you know, if somebody's stood up to dance, that they're not tripping over other people, that kind of stuff. So the sitter's really looking after the breather. What was your other question? Sorry.
So when if this if the sitters, when the sitter's turn come to do the breathing, is he going through, so when they're switching, does he go through exactly the same process? He's listening to the same music?
No, different music. So so when it's time for you to switch over, so if you've been breathing, Lena, and Muhammad's been your sitter, then we check in with you at the end of the session. So I'll come to you, Lena, and I'll say, how are you feeling? And then I'll say, how is your body feeling? And we want to check that you don't have any energy, kind of any blockage remaining in your body. We want to make sure that the energy is flowing and that you feel clear and bright. And I'll check you out for that. And if there's some energy stuck in your body somewhere, like, you know, there's some, often people might still have a block at their lower back or something at their shoulders, then we do a bit of body work to kind of move that through. And that body work just involves some pressure and some more breath and often some sounding, getting that person to you know, express, to make sounds and just to move that through. And then after that, Muhammad would go with you up into actually the room I'm sitting now, but go into another space where then you would do some creative expression. So generally you would do a mandala, which is where you put lines, colors, designs just into a circle. And the mandala is a way of expressing your journey without going into words, without going immediately to language and into your brain. It's just a way of putting some creative expression on the highlights of your journey, or just, you know, to express what you're feeling right now at the end of the journey. And then you two would go off somewhere, maybe in the garden, and then you would tell Muhammad all about your journey, all the nitty-gritty details of what went on, share your mandala with him. Then we would have some something to eat. It's usually just something light, like a fruit and nut kind of lunch, and then swap over. So reciprocation in the afternoon, but different music, and go through all of that again. So it's intense. It's a lot in one day. Yeah. And when I tell my people in New Zealand, you know, we do it all in one day in Dubai, they're like, oh my goodness, you know, it must just blow you up, because, so it's a lot. It's a lot.
And when does the integration happen of the benefits of the session? The same day or in the coming days afterwards?
Yeah, great question, Muhammad. Well, I think people feel immediately different after the session. The body work that we offer is part of the integration. The doing the mandala is part of the integration. Even the last hour of music is part of that integration. And the integration is, you know, that continues on. And sometimes people say, you know, it's like it took me, I haven't come back to holotropic breathwork because it's taken me, you know, 2 years to integrate it. So sometimes, you know, that's an unusual one, but it's like, it's not something you just kind of want to do every day. It's a powerful experience. And so people sometimes, especially if they haven't done so much work, they want to, you know, take their time integrating. And we give you a whole lot of information about that. There's a big spiel about make sure you don't share your journey with people who are not going to understand it. Just keep it to yourself. Mm. We also do at the end of the day, we do a big sharing circle where everybody comes together. They have about 4 minutes each to share the highlights of their journey. So that's also part of the integration.
So who is it for, Andrea? I mean, let's say I'm a person that is already doing other kinds of therapy. How would I know that breathwork, holotropic breathwork, is the thing for me? That's the first part of the question. And the second part is, are there people who shouldn't do it? Is it for everybody? Or are there people that could have adverse effects from it? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you need to have that calling, like, okay, I want to experience breath work. I think that people who come, they often have a spiritual calling. And some people have said, you know, it's the only time they've ever really experienced an authentic spiritual connection is when they've been doing breath work. So there's going to be some spiritual calling, some calling towards healing, some interest in non-ordinary states. And then, of course, you know, in this part of the world, it's illegal to be doing ayahuasca, psychedelics. We're not allowed to do that. So, you know, for people trying to do that here, that's going to create a lot of paranoia. So we know that we are allowed to breathe here, mm-hmm. listen to music. And so, you know, often people who come to me, they have done things like ayahuasca, but they want to continue that journey of experiencing non-ordinary states, you know, in a environment that's safe and that's legal. Mm-hmm. The other thing around holotropic breath work, which is different from taking a substance, is that you can kind of negotiate it a whole lot more. You know, you can open your eyes and stop the process and look around and see me standing over there. So there's a whole nother level of kind of safety with it and negotiation with it. You're not dealing with something that's digesting in your system that's, you know, totally out of control. Mm-hmm. And I think with Wim Hof and then with this huge, you know, there's just a huge interest now in stuff like DMT and stuff like ayahuasca. There's, you know, that's massive. There's so much on YouTube. And so holotropic is a great way to enter into those expanded states. Mm-hmm. And I think Wim Hof especially. And then the other piece is around the trauma. You know, I have clients who come to me and we do talk therapy and we talk a lot about the things that happened to them when they were young, the boundary invasions that happened, you know, that I'm just trying to think that Stan Grof, he talks about trauma in two different categories. So the omissions and the commissions. So, you know, the trauma is the commissions where somebody's done something to you, come into your space that's not okay. So it could be physical abuse, it could be some sort of emotional abuse, it could be sexual abuse, any of those categories. So some people are ready to go deeper with healing that rather than just talking about it. They're ready to go into the body. They're ready to really express that pain and that hurt and the betrayal and the shame and get to the other side of that and to look after that little inner child that suffered because of that. And so holotropic is not just about that, but it's a great space to do that work in. And so that's where we talk about going into your biography. So we talk about four different domains, the perinatal domain, the biographical domain, the transpersonal domain, and the somatic domain. So dealing with your story from this lifetime, it's a really helpful modality, but it's not just that.
Right. I'm already excited just hearing about it, to be honest. I don't know, Lina, if you feel the same thing, but
extremely, actually, extremely.
I totally
think
feel
there is a calling
excited.
For that.
Yeah, I think I have a calling. I feel like, you know, eventually I'll end up doing it.
Maybe Lina, you wanted need to ask something? Facilitating it, Muhammad. We need more male facilitators.
I'm ready. I would love to. Let me do it one time first as a part taking part. And then, honestly, I would love to be a facilitator.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm inspired because we just had this incredible weekend in New Zealand. So in the Coromandel, which is this gorgeous seaside area just beneath Auckland. And my friend, who's actually Emirati, she lives in Auckland. She did all the organization for this weekend. And because it was over a weekend and she did her movement therapy in the afternoons, we did holotropic in the morning. It was so incredible. I mean, people's hearts just opened. The people who were the sitters had the most incredible experiences during sitting, witnessing the room, witnessing their partner. It was spectacular. And part of that, I think, was also because we're in this container. We were away from the everyday life. You know, it's like, it made me think, oh God, we're always a bit rushed in Dubai, onto the next. But yeah, we had an epic time. So I love this work.
Sounds amazing.
So Andrea, I wanted to share with you back in 2003, I think, or four, I did The Art of Living. They came to Saudi Arabia and that was the first breath work that I've ever done. And I remember very clearly on the session that we had, so during the breath work, I personally experienced the muscle spasm that could happen during the breath work. It was quite intense, yeah, and the fingers. But then I looked at the room and there was like a burst of bubbles of different kind of emotions. Some people were crying, some were laughing, and it looked like a mental asylum pretty much. And I wonder if you guys get similar experiences with a holotropic breathwork.
Yeah, that's cool that you asked that question, Lena. So when I'm talking about that somatic domain, which is following the cues of the body, that's something that I like to mention, is that people can have this thing called tetany. So tetany is where there's this kind of stiffening, tightening of the fingers, the toes, and even sometimes the mouth. So kind of look like that. So sort of claw fingers, claw feet, and then there's sort of pursed lips. But most often you see it in the hands. And there's a physiological explanation about calcium levels. But if you just keep breathing, this tetany moves through, this cramping moves through. So we think this cramping is related to kind of an armoring of the body, kind of a control mechanism. And what generally happens that if you keep breathing and surrender and express, then that cramping releases. And I saw a beautiful example of it recently where somebody was, they were really cramping in their fingers. And myself, I came over and I just started to hold her hand. She asked, please can someone massage my hand, because we don't do things without being asked. So I was massaging one hand and her sitter was massaging, just gently touching the other hand. And we only did it like for a minute or so. And then she just held our hand, started to hold our hands and started to cry, and all the cramping released. Mm. And it was so beautiful to see. It's really a mechanism around that fear of letting go. You know, it's about control, because we're so terrified of letting go, and it was so unsafe to let go. You know, we were, you know, many of us had that experience of total overwhelm as kids. And being very much conditioned to keep it all in and put on a brave face, and boys don't cry and girls don't get angry, and, you know, managing and coping. And so, you know, there's a real invitation to express whatever needs to be expressed.
Speaking of that, what do you remember were some of the most amazing breakthroughs that you've seen from people taking part? Is there anything in particular that you remember that someone healed something, or that seemed impossible, or made a breakthrough that was so incredible that, you know, was beyond their expectations? I'm sure there's a lot of stories.
There's a lot. I'll talk about my first holotropic experience. But before that, I just want to talk about a guy that did holotropic a while back. And he was kind of dragged along by his wife. You know, it's like he kind of didn't necessarily really want to be there. But it's like, okay, I'm going to do this for her. And he had some job, like he was, you know, he was a motor mechanic or something. He had some really, really male job. And then when he was in the breath work, he had this incredible experience of the light. And he was like, what the heck? You know, it was a rainy day. And it's like, what the heck? We're dark, dark day. Why suddenly is there all this light? You know, has the sun come into the room? But he had this incredible experience of being lit up from within, and this experience of that divine connection. And it kind of shocked him, you know, deeply. He wasn't expecting that connection to the light. And honestly, I see that a lot. I see people a lot. I mean, it's not that we can necessarily tell all the time what's going on from the outside. And we, you know, we don't know what's going on, but there's often people are in that posture where their arms are uplifted, and even though they've got their eye mask on because they're in dark, you know, we usually have eye masks on to keep it dark, but they're looking up at the light and they're really transfixed by the light. So a lot of people have that incredible experience back to their divinity, back to source, back to that divine spark. But in my first holotropic breathwork experience, I went through a whole kind of birthing piece. My first child was a really, really difficult birth, and incredibly painful, incredibly long. And I'd been studying all about, you know, at the time I'd been studying rebirthing and all about natural birth and all about, you know, ideally I'd have my kid in a hot tub, but my baby was born in Oman, in Muscat in Oman. So there were no hot tubs there. You had to do it in a hospital, and he was late. So he was induced. And then I ended up having an epidural, and he was yanked out with forceps. So it was this birth that I really didn't want to have for my child. It was traumatic for him. It was incredibly traumatic for me as well. So I went through that. My body just kind of took me through that birth again, but in a much more amazing way. It was like I sort of, my body replayed it, but in a much more healing way. And then it kind of morphed into a transpersonal experience of me birthing myself. It was about me giving birth to myself. And then from that place, I kind of shot up into the universe. And I was cycling around with all of the planets and the stars, and then I was chatting with angels, and then there were Indian sort of religious deities. And so it kind of went into this profound birthing experience of me. Went through quite a lot of those domains that we talk about. And people often have a lot of animal experiences, you know, in that transpersonal, they'll morph into being an anteater, being a tiger, to being a panther, to being a snake, and then they start to move like that. So,
see, I've always wondered about these things, because I'm hearing about them from you now, and I also hear about them in the psychedelic world, like DMT, ayahuasca, when we start to have these visions. Do you think that we are opening a portal, that we are actually seeing real things because we're on a level of consciousness that we normally can't see? Or is this just the brain doing things, showing us things so we can heal? But it's imagination. Is it real or is it imaginary? I've always wondered this.
I think it's both, you know? I think it's actually both, Muhammad, because I think, to be honest, the researchers haven't proved it yet, but breathing the way we breathe in holotropic breath work, it stimulates quite possibly the DMT in our brain. So that's why we have the experiences, the hallucinations. And so I think we're tapping into the collective unconscious, you know, that level of archetypes, that level of energies that we all share. So we're tapping into that. We're also kind of magnifying our psyche. You know, we're in darkness. We're in darkness with our eyes closed, with an eye mask on. The room is usually quite dark. And it's like, our psyche is like, wow, finally, she's lying down. I get to show her what she needs to see, you know, what it is she needs for her healing. Mm. And sometimes people really feel like they're pinned to the mattress. And it's like our higher self has finally, we've got her. She's there. And we can use this time and this space for her healing. So I think it's both. I think we are all connected, and we're connected to this collective mind. And then there's individual stuff that we need to see for ourselves. We need to experience for ourselves. And then also what's interesting around that is that, which is why it's nice to have the community, is that sometimes there's themes. So one person on one side of the room might be experiencing something, and then somebody will report later on the other side of the room, they'll be experiencing the same thing. You know, so there might be similar kind of themes emerging.
Wow.
Is it something, Andrea, that you can do after taking the workshop? Is it something that you can just do at home whenever you want, or you just, you need to be in that setting with that group, with the facilitators?
You know, we talk all the time about safe set and safe setting. So the safe set is about having a really clear mindset about why you're doing it. So you're not just doing it recreationally. You're doing it with that really strong intention for healing, for liberation, for clarity. And then the setting, strong setting, safe setting is that you're doing it in a place where you know that you're really safe to let go. So it's hard to kind of let go fully just on your own at home. I mean, you can do those kinds of practices that you did at Art of Living, and you can achieve, you know, something with that, but you're not gonna fully let go without having that holding space. So it's not really something that we say, yeah, go home and do this on your own, because you're not gonna have that same experience.
Right, you need this kind of similar music as well, because from what I understood is that the music plays a big role in the experience, going through the experience.
Yeah, I mean, you can find some really amazing tracks on, you know, on Spotify. You can find some, you know, you can put some together for yourself, but the music, the way that we do it, it's a big part of it, actually, because we project a lot. A lot gets stimulated by the music. We project a lot onto the music. Yeah, and the music's very loud as well. So it's like kind of vibrating your body as well.
And so for those who are interested in attending the session, do they, their only goal is to actually come to Dubai or go to New Zealand, right? It's not like you tour around.
I'm in Dubai most of the time, and then, you know, because of COVID, I quickly went back to New Zealand now for a month, and then I'll go back again to New Zealand in August and some of September. But I'm mostly in Dubai. Sometimes people want to do individual sessions, and so I try to create space for them to do individual sessions, but ideally, I then try to move them towards coming and doing a group session. And so we have a group session on the 28th of May in Dubai. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And I think at the moment that's half full. We won't take any more than 14 people in our group. And then in New Zealand, that's, you know, it's a bit far for people from here to go to. But yeah, I mean, I'm here. Generally, we only offer those groups maybe 3, maxi 4 times a year. And during COVID, we didn't do many at all, of course, because we couldn't be breathing over each other. So we did a quiet one in New Zealand in 2020, or a couple of quiet ones in New Zealand that were just kind of promoted underground. Yeah.
So if I were to come for my first experience, Andrea, do I need to know exactly what I'm coming for? I mean, do I need to have a specific intention that I'm coming to work on this specific issue? Or do I just come as I am and my inner healer will let me know what I need to be working on? That's how it works.
Come as you are, Mohammed. So, you know, you probably have a specific intention to get you to the workshop, because, you know, it's time and money, it's an effort, you know, there's probably other things you'd rather be doing on a Saturday. So you're gonna, there's gonna be some lure that brings you, or someone that pushes you to come. And then we get everyone to express what it is they're hoping to get from the workshop. And then we ask them to just let that go, to release that, because we're gonna allow your inner healer to take over. So, you know, I was thinking recently, I did some breath work for myself, and my husband's been going through a lot of health stuff. So I thought I'd be really, really upset about him. But something else entirely different came up around my grandmother. That was a big theme in the breath work. So oftentimes we have these ideas where we think we need healing or things need to be sorted out, but there's something else going on underneath that. So, you know, that's it's so incredible. We're not in charge. Our kind of limited ego identity doesn't know best always.
The inner healer knows what to prioritize for us, right? Better than we do.
And so when we ask that question, you know, why this and why now, you know, why did you have that experience, and we get people to relate it back to what's going on in their life now, your inner healer knows what it is that you need to clear, or what you need to be in touch with for your life right now. So, you know, that is, it's just amazing, and it's so empowering, because we are conditioned from a really young age that the power, the expertise lies outside of us. Holotropic breathwork is like, no, you have everything within you. And we're not even using something outside of ourselves, okay, the music. But you know, we're relying on our breath and the inner experience. You have this incredible inner wisdom, and it's just, yeah, it's really profound, rather than giving your power away to the so-called expert.
Yeah. Lena, you got any more questions?
No, actually, I don't. This has been very rich, very, very rich and beautiful, Andrea. I have very much enjoyed this episode, actually.
Me too. And I still have two more questions, but I'm just checking if you had any. Okay. The first one is, now, since everybody has an inner healer, and you said in the beginning that this is a part of ourselves that is always pushing us to move forward towards healing, right, for our entire life, why is it that many people don't heal, or many people, they self-sabotage themselves for their entire lives? Is it that their inner healer isn't doing his job, or they're resisting it? What's going on?
I think, you know, this is really complex, and it's whether you choose to listen and to honor and to kind of surrender to that, that healing thread. And I think sometimes people's trauma is so overwhelming that their addictions take over. You know, it's like their trauma, their hurt, their pain, the way that they've been conditioned. And, you know, it might not just be from the family. It might be that they were brought up in a war zone. And it's just, you know, so overwhelming that they can't go there. And then I think, you know, for lots of people, and I heard one of you said, maybe it was Hadil, your interview with Hadil. It's like, not everybody is on this healing path, and not everybody is ready, has that courage to dive in. You know, there's only a few of us really, even though it's opening up, there's still relatively only a few of us that have that courage to really face and to really move beyond the denial, the amnesia, this idea that we're all separate and life is a struggle, and to really start to shift those ideas. So it takes courage, and it takes listening, and it takes a certain calling. But I still believe that there's an inner healer that is right there, but we have to choose to listen to it.
Right, yeah. And I do too. I believe in it too. And I believe that Now this coming generation are probably going to be even more aware and more in tune of their inner healers. Like you said, it's a few of us, but I also see everywhere in the world, you know, more and more people becoming more interested and more aware. I really feel like this, for example, this podcast, if we had done it 10 years ago, we would have a lot fewer people who would tune in and be interested in watching it. And now more and more people are tuning in. So I totally see it this way too, Andrea. My other question was also out of curiosity, because you mentioned past life and some traumas could be related to past lives. Now, on the topic of past lives, I'm still on the fence. Okay, so I cannot say that I'm 100% believer that yes, I've definitely had a past life before, but at the same time, I don't deny it. I don't say nah, I've definitely never had a past life. I'm still somewhere in the middle. Do you think that doing a holotropic breathing session is going to resolve that, let's say this question that I still have? Am I going to experience something where I'm going to say, oh yeah, this is definitely from a past life that I've had?
I think that I'm with you, Mohammed. I am still not 100% certain. And I think that it's, I think we have to ride that wave of uncertainty, actually. Mm. And I also think from my own experience, I feel like that we are born into this world with those threads that are unresolved, possibly unresolved from past existences, that they are going to kind of be regurgitated in our childhood, in the challenges we go through as babies, as children. I feel like we have enough to deal with in our story now. So kind of getting freaked out about all the past life stuff. And, you know, there's just enough in this life to be dealing with, quite honestly. And then having said that, I've also had fascinating, you know, in hypnosis, probably less in holotropic, but in doing past life hypnosis, I've had fascinating experiences. And then I've been to places, traveled places. I traveled to Nepal when I was about 28, 29 years old. And I arrived in, I think it's called Durba Square in Kathmandu. And I was like, I've been here before. This is so familiar to me. It was freaky. It was like, I feel totally at home here. It's giving me goosebumps telling you. It's like, I've been here before for sure. And so I've had those weird experiences, and I'm sure you guys have had that as well. So yes. I'm not sure. We just have to ride that way.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Stay curious and open-minded about it and ride the wave. So this has been amazing, Andrea. Thank you very much for your time. There's a couple of questions that we ask every guest. One of them is, who is one person, either a person or a book that you've read recently, or a person that you've met or encountered that has had a huge impact on you, or both, you know, person and book that you would recommend?
Yeah, actually, I was just reading this book right now on the flight back from New Zealand called Breath by James Nestor. I think that's right. See, the breath or breathe. I think it's Breath by James Nestor. And that's incredible, all about the power of the breath. And there's only about you know, 2 pages maximum on holotropic breath work in there, but there's so much interesting information on the breath. It's really cool. So that was my latest reading. And then there's something else that's incredible, but I'm kind of reluctant to say it on here. I'm just going to hold you up the book.
Right, okay.
It's all about open relationships. So okay. I have some clients who are dealing with this. So I saw this book in New Zealand. I was like, whoa. So I'm looking at that at the moment.
Does that have anything to do with breathing at all?
That one not.
Okay.
But I can send you, I send my clients often this really big book list of my favorite books. I'll send it to you guys. You can.
Yeah, that would be great. And where can people reach you, Andrea? I mean, what you prefer for people to contact you through Instagram, through your website? Are you
just, to be honest, through WhatsApp? Media? WhatsApp is the easiest for me. My son's girlfriend, Neve, has just started up the Instagram page on Breathing with Andrea. I've never really bothered with that before. I have a website, which is andreaanstis.com. But it's easiest to get me through WhatsApp. That's the best.
So because we usually in the bio, or let's say in the description of the episode, we like to put a link of how people can reach you. So I mean, are you comfortable with us putting your WhatsApp number or your website?
Fine. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
No problem.
All right. Very, very cool. Well, again, it's been a pleasure, Andrea. I mean, the topic of breathing is, I'm sure we can talk about it for even longer. So many things are coming to my mind right now, but I'll delay them for a future episode. But I mean, thank you so much. It was a pleasure. This was truly a conscious convo.
So. A pleasure. Thank you guys. It's been really fun.
Thank you very much. And hopefully, you never know, we might have you back here if you've enjoyed it. We might have you as a guest again.
I'm very happy to talk about some of the inner child work at some point when you're ready. And
yeah.
I also have lots of amazing friends I can recommend for your podcast as well. So
awesome. That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And for everyone else, thank you for tuning in. And see you next time. Take care.